Romeinje, 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 Romeinje.
You're listening to Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tamara Kramer, and Shtetl is a Yiddish word for the small towns of Eastern Europe where the Jews once lived. Shtetl on the Shortwave is a show about Jewish arts and culture in Montreal.
In Romania is doch geht, bin kein Sorgen, weiß man nicht. Norma singt den Norma, red, red, verbeißt ein Kastravet.
All right, we're back on Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT. That was a little bit from the Barry Sisters, and they sing in Yiddish. They were originally called the Bagelman Sisters, so they kind of Americanified their names, but they still sung in Yiddish, so they weren't assimilating all the way. And Yiddish. It's something I really want to learn, and I think it's going to become a bit of a new segment on Shtetl on the Shortwave, learning Yiddish phrase of the week. And I'm going to start by telling you this one that my mother used to always tell me. It's Men tracht und Gott lacht. And I have a pretty bad accent there, but but it means man plans and God laughs. And I think that's a really, really good expression for doing live radio, because sometimes things just happen to fall through and you got to roll with the punches because God is up there just kind of laughing at you. Anyways, today we're going to kind of celebrate the post International Women's Day, because we didn't have a show this year on Women's Day, so we're doing it now. And we're going to play a clip from an interview that I did last year with a really amazing woman in Montreal. Her name is Rivka Zimbalist. She's a doula, and she has helped deliver many babies, and we're going to go to that a little bit later. But before we do, we're going to hear something from a woman of yesteryear, a very powerful woman, especially for her time. She was born in 1884. She's born in Russia, and her family moved to America in the early 1900s. And she had a nickname, and the nickname was the Last of the Red Hot Mamas. And she sort of like dropped out of school. She didn't really fit in anywhere exactly, but what she really loved to do was play piano in bars. And she started at a very young age and ended up being part of the Siegfried Follies. She was a crowd pleaser. People loved her, but the only thing was she was fat and ugly, according to her promoters. That's how they called her. They said, hey, here's the fat girl, Sophie Tucker. And she sort of went with that and said, screw you, I don't care. You know, if that's how you want to portray me, I'm going to be proud of it. And some of her songs are called like Fat and Proud. And that's pretty, I think that's pretty groundbreaking for, you know, the early 1900s. So Sophie Tucker had a long career, and strangely enough, in the beginning, they were so uncomfortable with how she looked that they would make Sophie Tucker go on stage in blackface. Very strange. And one day she forgot her makeup and she went on stage without it, and people loved her anyways, and that was the last she ever did blackface. So it's a bit of an odd story, but very interesting. And Sophie Tucker sang until a few days before she passed away in 1966. She kept performing. She lived in New York. She was financially successful on her own and started a foundation herself for other artists. And she's just sort of like a groundbreaking woman. And this is Sophie Tucker for president. Listen, it's pretty funny.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a gal who never wanted to mix into politics, but my country needs me now, 'cause it's in one awful fix. You men have been running the USA for years, you've had full sway. I think it's a crime and just about time that we women had our way. You men have ignored the women, you've always been unfair. What we need is a woman now in the presidential chair. I ran for president 4 years ago, but Mr. Truman got in. Like William Jennings Bryan, I keep on trying, and this time I'm going to win. My presidential boom is going to be big and strong, and from now on, you'll hear this campaign song. Sophie Tucker for president, your candidate for 1952. On the day that I'm elected, all you gals have been neglected will be furnished with a lover tried and true. You just vote for Sophie Tucker for president, and I guarantee a better deal for you. You women who have husbands who just go to bed and snore, I'll pass a law, I'll make them be as amorous as of yore. Like Dr. Pepper, they'll be good at 10 and at 2 and at 4. You vote for Sophie Tucker for president, your candidate for 1952. And here is my platform. When I'm elected, I will see to it that we women get our rights. We'll not only have better days, but more enjoyable nights. We've been getting the old one, too, from all of you politicians, when what we want is greater affection and better loving conditions. We now have government controls on all kinds of merchandise. When I get in, we're going to begin to put controls on all you guys. We'll put a control on every old wolf who's cheating on his spouse, and we'll freeze what he's got to cheat with before he leaves the house. Now, when it comes to the forgotten man, I'll go one better than Mr. Truman. I'll put every forgotten man with some forgotten woman. And if they need information on that popular indoor sport, instead of the congressional record, I'll send them the Kinsey Report. For the betterment of our widows, you can't beat the Tucker plan. In every closet, a new mink coat, and every boudoir man. You may get a widow's pension now, maybe all right. But what good is a pension on a cold and rainy night? What you women need is a guy like Clark Gable to call on you every night at 9 with a big, long, kosher salami and a bottle of Manischewitz wine. He'll take care of your welfare in a manner you'll adore. And you can call up your psychiatrist and tell him you don't need him anymore. That's why I say we've got to have a woman in the White House. Women are doing everything today. We have women doctors.
Hooray for the women doctors!
We have women lawyers!
Hooray for the women lawyers!
We have women plumbers!
Hooray for the women plumbers!
In fact, there's very little difference between a man and a woman!
Hooray for that little difference!
Stop your heckling, please. Here is the most important issue. When it comes to the policy of foreign affairs, may I modestly say, I've had a couple of foreign affairs and I handled them okay. I'll take care of those Russian diplomats who do nothing but stall or disagree. Because when I get through with those guys, they'll have no strength to veto me. There's a big difference between war and peace. One fact you can't ignore. No man yet has ever said, I've just had a darn good war. So vote for Sophie Tucker for president.
Hat sich die Städtel auf den Shortwave auf CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
All right, we're back on Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT. Thank you for tuning in this lovely Friday in springtime. And with springtime, we all know that it's about rebirth and renewal. And coming up very soon is a very special holiday in the Jewish tradition, one that I think a lot of Jewish people just love to death. It's everybody's favorite Jewish holiday, I think. And it's Passover. And Passover is all about going from slavery to freedom. And the big symbol is the Hebrew people who were slaves in Egypt were led away through the waters of the Red Sea, and they were led into freedom. And this is a time where we clean our homes and everything is renewed. And that's what we're going to be celebrating. We're going to have a special Passover show in a couple of weeks. And I think Moses, I mean, he definitely went through a lot, and he's definitely a major character in the history of the Jewish people. But what a lot of people don't know is that there were a number of women that made this whole story possible that many people have never even heard of. That's what we're going to focus on today, because it's the Women's Day show. The women of the Passover story, well, we're not going to focus on it, but we're going to talk and hear from somebody who symbolizes these women, and they are called Shifra and Pua. They're the two midwives in Egypt who disobeyed the Pharaoh's order to kill the firstborn.
Oh.
So they actually saved the Jewish people. and they saved Moses's life. And to this day, we have midwives in Montreal, and they are also very important in the birthing process, even though they're sort of like alternative, and not, it's not the norm to use midwife, but it's sort of becoming more and more popular. And if you're not going to have a midwife, you can also have a doula. And you might not have heard of doulas, but we're going to find out exactly what that is from Rivka Zimbalist. She's an Orthodox woman in Montreal who's brought many, many children into this world, accompanying women giving birth. And she has a whole nonprofit organization that that gives doula services to immigrant women who can't afford to get them themselves, or to women who are just not able to acquire those services. And she's a very interesting lady, and she explains to us what her job is and what exactly it means to be a doula.
My name is Rivka Zimbalist. I'm a doula here in Montreal. I've been working here for 10 years. Myself and my partner Leslie Everest run a very comprehensive doula training program here. And I also run a volunteer doula program that provides disadvantaged women with free doulas.
And can you tell me what exactly a doula is?
So a doula is a trained woman who gives women during the childbearing year physical and emotional and informational support. We are not trained clinically, but we do recognize clinical things when they happen. So we can tell if something's wrong in labor or birth. But we don't do anything per se to fix it. A woman that works with a doula always has a medical caregiver, whether that's a midwife or a doctor, who provides the medical care.
What does the word doula mean?
I don't think it's a very good word. Doula is taken from the Greek, and it was assumed that it meant maid servant, but actually it means more like slave. So it's one of those times when we've kind of blithely taken a word from another culture and we've actually misappropriated it. But it's sticking. So doula means maidservant.
And when and why did you become a doula?
If you speak to anyone, whether it's a family physician or an obstetrician, a midwife or a doula, it's something that you're drawn to. Not everyone wants to, you know, be woken up at 3 a.m. and then be with someone who's probably throwing up and definitely in pain and doing all that stuff. But we're drawn to it, so I can't really explain why.
It's kind of like a calling.
Yeah.
Who are your clientele?
I have a pretty specific clientele. I work with, one thing I love about living in Montreal is I've worked with people from all over the world. And I'd say probably 30% of my clientele are Jewish. And of that 30%, I'd say probably a third of those are Orthodox Jews. And then the other 70% is made up of everyone, like all sorts of different people.
Why is it so popular in the Hasidic community for women to have a doula?
It's a very common thing for Hasidic women to take someone with them when they're in labor. I don't think that they hire a doula more often. I think it's mostly, you know, my mother or my aunt or, you know, my friend or someone that goes with. It's partly just that if you're having 10 children and you realized on baby number 2 that it was a good idea to bring someone with you. And then, of course, the other reason is that the men aren't so involved. They're very involved. They're involved in a spiritual way. Saying Tillim for your wife when she's in labor is an amazing source of support, but they're not massaging and touching and doing all that stuff that that some of the other couples that I work with do.
Why don't they do that?
Because as soon as a woman's in active labor or her waters break or her she's had any blood, then she's considered to be nidda. Just like when she has her period, and that means that that she can't touch her husband. And or her husband can't touch her until she has to count for a certain number of days and then go to the mikveh. So it, some men even stay outside of the room. They stay behind the curtain and they say tillim. But more of the experienced fathers who've been there, you know, their wives have had a few children, they're usually in the room, that they just don't, you know, don't kind of participate in the physical activity. But I have to say that the Hasidic women, well, there's a doctor at the Jewish General, one of the family physicians, Dr. Pearl Feldman. She actually did a study on Hasidic women giving birth. And those births are just a dream. They're wonderful births to go to. The support that women have, the emotional and spiritual support that they have, is fantastic. And it helps them give birth. It really does.
So the praying, when you say Tehillim, that means saying prayers. And I guess that's the support that you're talking about, the spiritual support that they're getting?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I had a woman about 8 years ago who she was having a baby after a very long, long gap. And she was older, like well into her 40s. And she was very nervous. And things weren't going anywhere. And it was definitely the time in a labor when the doctors were coming in and saying, you know, I think you're going to have a cesarean because this is nothing's happening here. So the doctor, I said, you know, could we have a little time just to talk? And the doctors left. And it was first thing in the morning. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning. And I said to her, you know, maybe we should just do our morning brachas. And so she started praying and the baby's heartbeat picked up. And she prayed a little more, and it picked up a little more. And by the time she had finished the whole morning prayers, she was ready to give birth. I mean, it doesn't always happen like that, but that was one of the most clear examples of... And it's not that, you know, I'm not saying, oh, you ask God, and God points finger down and says, oh, you can give birth now. But it's just that if you... The whole thing about giving birth is if you trust that your body can do it. So then if you trust that your body was made to do that, then it's much, much easier for most women. Of course, you know, there are always things that happen, but...
Have you seen a lot of women really freaking out or being afraid or resisting and having a really hard time?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're there with them. And one of the good things about having a doula is when you are having a really hard time and freaking out, I'll just smile at you and say, you know, this is fine. It's all normal and it's good. And that's what you want when you're freaking out. You don't want someone to say, no, no, stop it. Or, you know, it's fine. You just want someone to be with you there and hold the space around you and let it happen.
I wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about the nonprofit work that you do. Who are the people that you help, and how do you find them, or how do they find you?
I'll tell you a bit about the history. We saw about 5 or 6 years ago, we were getting calls from doulas that were coming out of 3-day workshops and things and going into the hospitals here and being doulas and being devastated because they didn't have enough training. And so we created a training program that is a year long. One of the prerequisites for certification with our organization is that you need to do some volunteer hours in the community with women and children and babies. So 5 years ago, one of our students went to the Montreal Diet Dispensary. Well, it was started in the 30s by a nurse who discovered that low birth weight babies were being born because women weren't getting enough nutrition. It's still going. Now there are about 2,000 women that pass through its doors every year. These two students went down there and started volunteering. And first they were just, you know, sorting out the baby clothes and stuff. And then they started talking to the dietitians and realized there was a need for some of the women there to have doulas. So that's how it started. Last year, we helped 50 women. Many of those, I would say the huge majority of those women are either refugees or recent immigrants. Most of the women are on their own. That is, they're not necessarily single, but a large group of those women are refugees. They're here on their own, and their husbands are stuck in wherever they came from. Okay. We get calls from the diet dispensary. We get calls from CLSEs all across the city. and from some of the shelters, mm-hmm. and Elizabeth House. So most of the women are, I'd say they're divided in probably four different places, mostly the French-speaking African countries, but also from English-speaking West African countries. The African women come here with just terrible stories, and it's wonderful for them to have a doula to accompany them through mm-hmm. the process. There are quite a few women now that are coming from China. They're coming here, and many of them are immigrants, but their husbands are still back in China, so they're on their own, and they don't speak either English or French, many of them. We get quite a few Indian women, either like the Indian subcontinent, either India, Bangladesh, mm-hmm. and many of those actually do have their partners with them, but they're very poor, so they couldn't afford to hire a doula. And then we get women from North Africa, quite a few of them. And my so-called my doulas speak English and French and Spanish, and I have an Arabic speaker and Hebrew. And so I like to have, I mean, my actual goal with the program is to go out into the communities and train doulas within the communities.
Are doulas fully recognized and respected by the medical establishment? And is it easy for doulas there at the hospital when they're participating in a birth?
It depends on the hospital. Many of the hospitals now in Montreal accept doulas. The acceptance of doulas has grown a lot in the past 10 years. Whereas before, I'd say over 10 years ago, there were a few doulas around who perhaps didn't respect the limits that a doula has. I mean, when I go into a hospital, I know that I'm not going to do medical things. I'm just not. I won't take blood pressure. I won't do internal exams. I'm not allowed to. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I know my place means a lot to the medical staff. I mean, any organization is a hierarchy, and you have to accept that.
What are women's biggest fears around pregnancy and giving birth? And has it changed over the years?
That's a question I always ask my clients, and everyone has a different fear. Many, many women are scared of having a cesarean. Some women are scared of pushing. Some women are scared of the pain. Some women are scared that their baby won't be healthy. But it's very interesting, because you would think that there would be like one or two things that the women were scared of, but everyone has something different. But I don't think those things change. And in a sense, I think the prospect of giving birth always fills you with fear. Even if you've had 15 babies, you know, it's a huge thing to bring another life into the world. So it fills you with fear. And then you just have to kind of pick out the reason, basically out of a hat, that, like, I'm feeling afraid. What am I afraid of? You know, that's the secondary thing. It's mostly just that, yes, I'm afraid because I'm going to be giving birth.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been at a birth where there was a stillborn, or where the child came out not healthy?
Yeah, I have, and it's very difficult.
How do you interact with the woman when something like that happens?
Well, the one thing that we teach our students is, you know, we're involved in a process that is very close to that edge between life and death. And sooner or later, as a doula, you're going to have the death part. So really, if something very disturbing is happening, then I just doula the woman just the way I've been doulaing her through her pain in labor. And the one thing that I will say, though, is that one thing that has really improved for doulas in Montreal is that we now have a sense of community, so that if something happens like that, we have a support system that can help the doula herself deal with it. Because we take people's pain away with us. maternity care in the States, which is much worse than maternity care in Canada, partly just because of the whole private healthcare system and the fact that doctors can be sued at the drop of a hat, so that there are many medical techniques and activities that are being done simply because of the legalities rather than because the woman really needs it.
Like what?
Well, for example, if a woman is choosing to have a vaginal birth after a cesarean, the doctor's understanding of that is that it's full of risk and that it's something that jumps into uncharted territory. So something could go wrong. If you're likely to be sued for $10 million if something goes wrong, then you'd much rather do something that you're totally in control of, such as another cesarean. It's the fault of the system. It's a terrible system in the States. I have a lot more hope for the maternity system here, just because we come out of a tradition of providing public health. Mm-hmm. So I think there's more hope for us here. I really think that in Quebec we're at a crossroads in obstetrical care, because everyone's making an attempt to respect the process of childbirth and to give women more options. And I know there'll be a lot of people out there who don't agree with what I say, mm-hmm. but I see slow progress. Mm-hmm. So in terms of us being at a crossroads, I think that it could go either way. We could either go the way of the States, which is, doctors running around doing all sorts of high-tech things because they're trying to prevent being sued, or we could go the way of the intelligent way of perhaps even getting doulas on the payroll of the health system, so that we cut down the epidural rate by my epidural rate is about 30%, and in most of the hospitals in Montreal it's over 95%. And every epidural kit costs. We cut down cesarean. My C-section rate is 6%. Mm. And I know it's skewed because there are certain... I mean, I get people who want a natural birth, so of course it's skewed a little bit. Mm-hmm. The C-section rate in most of the hospitals is over 25%. So we're saving money for the government.
Doesn't it hurt to have a birth without an epidural?
It does hurt. Pain in childbirth is necessary. So women are strong. They're strong enough to take the pain. There's a whole emotional and psychological, and if you want to go that route, spiritual process that is going on when a woman's giving birth. And if you break that with an epidural, then you've done a woman a disservice. An epidural is a tool. It's a high-tech tool, and when it's needed, it's fantastic. I would say probably 5% of the women that I have accompanied need an epidural. Mm-hmm. For example, I've had women who've been horribly abused in childhood. They need to disassociate from their bodies when they're giving birth. So an epidural is a fantastic tool. Or a woman who's been in a really intense labor for 2 days and needs a sleep, certainly an epidural. Mm-hmm. But for every woman, it's a waste.
Why would a woman who was really abused during childhood, why would it be good for her to disassociate from her body during birth?
Well, abuse, I'm talking about sexual abuse. So all sorts of things are triggered during birth. Okay. Birth is it's a sexual event. Mm-hmm. And so all of those feelings and that part of the body are trigger points. So if she can actually have a normal birth with an epidural, then it will really transform her image of her body. Of course, if she could do it without an epidural, it would be fantastic. But many women, that intensity and that... just that intensity of feeling around that part of the body is too much for them to bear. So if they can just disassociate a little bit, break it up a little bit, then they can manage to give birth normally, and that's great. That's wonderful for a woman like that to avoid having a cesarean.
Okay. And my last question is there any precedence for doulas in the Bible?
Well, that's an interesting one. In the introduction to our book, I talk about the history of women accompanying women, and I think essentially the Shifra and Pua probably started out as doulas. Let's put it that way.
That was Rivka Zimbalist, a Montreal doula, and she's an Orthodox woman here. She has many children of her own, and she's sort of at the forefront of this new way of bringing children into the world. And she's, I guess, following a tradition that, like she said, and like I mentioned before, of women midwifing for many, 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 many years, probably since the beginning of time. And it's interesting what direction things might go in. I found it interesting that she was saying we might go the same way, the same route of the States, and go more high tech and become more concerned about being sued, or we could take things in a different direction and go the more natural route. And that really remains to be seen. We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to be back with a group called Pharaoh's Daughter. And Pharaoh's Daughter is another important character in the Passover story. And I'll tell you a little bit about that when we come back on CKUT. Thanks for tuning in.
Honey, are these leftovers safe to eat?
Not sure. Let's check out healthycanadians.gc.ca.
Where?
It's a website loaded with great information about food safety, including food recalls and allergy alerts and lots of tips like how to handle leftovers.
Ugh, what about this green moldy thing?
That I don't need a website for.
Help keep your family healthy and safe. Visit healthycanadians.gc.ca and sign up to receive the latest food recalls and allergy alerts delivered right to your email. A message from the Government of Canada.
All right, so we're going to hear some music from Pharaoh's Daughter, and I'm just going to read you a tiny little bit about what Pharaoh's Daughter's role was in the story. It's after Moses is born, his mother gives birth to him in secret, and she kept him for a while, and when she could no longer hide him, she made a basket of reeds and put him in the river. She left her daughter Miriam to watch the basket. Pharaoh's daughter came to the river to bathe and saw the basket. She took the baby for her own. She told Miriam to find a nurse for the child from the Hebrews. So Miriam got her mother, who nursed Moses. Moses's name means drawn out. Pharaoh's daughter named him that because she drew him out of the water. And we'll see as time passes that his name will grow more and more significant. So Pharaoh's daughter, who is the daughter of the Pharaoh, whose name we're never really told in the story, is also extremely significant in the Passover story, in that she saved Moses and took him to the palace to live with her family and sort of raised him herself, and got a woman from the Hebrews to nurse him. So she enabled Moses to be nursed by his very own mother. And it's very significant, and it's important to always remember all the different women in the stories of our traditions and our history. And this woman, Basia Schechter, has her own band called Pharaoh's Daughter. So she's dedicated the name of her whole band to this woman, this quote unquote Gentile woman who is so significant in the Jewish story. And she grew up in an Orthodox family, but she sort of left that way of living, but still very connected with her Jewish tradition, but also very connected with musical traditions from around the world, and finds it important to like blend. And so this is how on her site, and you can check it out, it's pharaohsdaughter.com, how they describe the music. It says, blending a psychedelic sensibility and a pan-Mediterranean sensuality, Basia Schechter leads her band, Pharaoh's Daughter, through swirling Hasidic chants, Mizrahi and Sephardi folk rock, and spiritual stylings filtered through percussion, flute, strings, and electronica. Her sound has been cultivated by her Hasidic music background and a series of trips to the Middle East, Africa, Israel, Egypt, Central Africa, Turkey, Kurdistan, and Greece. So here is a song called Empezare from Pharaoh's Daughter.
Bless. So that was Impasare by Pharaoh's Daughter. Lead singer of the band is Basia Schechter, and we're going to hear another song of hers off her new album, and it's called Ka Ribon. I was just trying to find some Babelfish website, something, so that I could translate and find out what that means, Ka Ribon. If anybody out there is listening and knows what that means, could you just email me and let me know about it at shtetlradio@gmail.com? That's shtetlradio@gmail.com. What does Ka Ribon mean? Well, I know what the song sounds like, and it's very lovely, so I'm going to let you listen to that right now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes on Shuttle on the Shortwave. So that was Pharaoh's Daughter, Ka Ribon. Totally. All her songs have very different sounds to them, and that one was a very peaceful one, very different from the other one we heard before. A little bit new agey with a bit of a Scottish influence. I don't know, she's really, really mixing it up with all the different cultures, which is fun, which is definitely fun. And if you want to hear her music, check out her MySpace page or go to pharaohsdaughter.com. And Basia Schechter, I've seen her perform live, and she's beautiful herself, and she has amazing musicians with her. And so if ever she came to Montreal, it would be worth checking her out. Or she plays a lot in New York, so you could always check her out there. But first up, pharaohsdaughter.com. And we're going to hear, we got Butcher T coming in through the window. He's going to be doing his show in just under 10 minutes, Butcher T's Noontime Cut. So stay tuned, because Butcher T always offers up the best music that you want to like shake your booty to. He's very chill, and he's got R&B and reggae and all kinds of stuff to play for you. So stay tuned for Butcher T's Noontime Cuts. And we're going to hear another song by Sophie Tucker. Originally, her name was Sonia Kalish. She was a real groundbreaking woman. She made her first appearance with the Siegfried Follies in 1909, but didn't last long because the other women soon became really angry with her and refused to share the spotlight with the popular Tucker. And throughout her singing career, she had a very kind of wild life and a very up and down relationship history. She was married to three different men and always felt like in the end, is she kind of needed her own independence. She did have kids, though. I think she had one son. And Sophie Tucker, she went on until the very end. She started off being made fun of because she was the fat woman, the fat girl, but she recorded songs and didn't care, like, nobody loves a fat girl, but oh, how a fat girl can love. So that was like the type of song that she would sing. She was always talking about how important it was for her to be financially independent and to be able to buy her own fur stoles and whatever necklaces she wanted. And she was a very giving woman and a groundbreaking woman. So I thought she would be perfect for today's show celebrating Women's History Month. And we're going to hear another song from her. It was a song that was written in 1911 and was made popular by Sophie Tucker, one of her more popular songs. And here she is performing it in 1927. It's called Some of These Days.
Life is a book, so they say, of records on each page. I turned my first leaf when I went upon the stage. The road was rough and it was tough, especially for a girl alone. Heartache, sighing, nights of crying. For my folks at home, why, I remember way back when I was a young Connecticut lass. I was just as green as grass, had lots of nerve, no class. And the men I met then, they were some sweet bunch. Said a star they'd make me. Right away they tried to date me, but I had a Yiddish hunch. Then there came a day for a job with pay. I wondered if I'd make it. Only 20 beans, but when you're broke it seems a fortune, and you take it. And then there came along one fine song. I hope you'll never forget to remember me when you hear. Some of these days you'll be so lonely. Some of these days you'll miss me, honey. You'll miss my hugging. You're gonna miss my kissing. You're gonna miss me, honey, when I'm far away. I feel so lonely for you only, 'cause you know, honey, you've had your way. And when you leave me, you know it's gonna grieve me. Gonna miss your big fat mama, your mama. Some of these days, some of these days, you'll miss me, honey. Some of these days, you're gonna be so lonely. You'll miss my hugging. You're gonna miss my kissing. You're gonna miss me, honey, when I'm far away. Said I feel so lonely for you only, 'cause you know, honey, you've had your way. And when you leave me, you know it don't grieve me. Gonna miss your big fat mama, your mama.
That was Sophie Tucker, Some of These Days. And I got this very rare recording that I found in a basement here in Montreal at the home of a Hasidic man who collects very offbeat musical tracks. And so he let me into his home and we were looking in the basement through all this stuff. And he said, Tamara, I have to tell you, and I can't do his accent, but he was just, he loves Sophie Tucker, especially when she was doing blackface. It's very weird. No, it's not true. I found this track on YouTube and I really think people should go check it out. It's called Some of These Days, and you can kind of see her evolution from like a little girl and all the way till an older woman, and she's quite the woman. I really admire her a great deal. So that's kind of it for the Women's Day special on Shtetl on the Shortwave. And just to review, today we had the awesome Rivka Zimbalist, Montreal Doula. We heard from Pharaoh's Daughter, Sophie Tucker. We had teching at the board, Katie Moore, who has her own show. You can listen. When is it, Katie?
It's on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. It's the Country Classics Hour.
Country Classics Hour, Sunday nights at 8 p.m. We're going to go out with just a little word from Peaches, and then it's all Butcher T's Noontime Cuts. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with the Passover special.
Shtetl, oi! What is it? Shtetl what?
Shtetl on the shortwave.
Hello? Hello, Ma. Hello, Ma. It's me, Mira. Peaches. Afasakim. You're listening to Shtetl on the shortwave. Oi vey. On CIUT.
CKUT.
Oh. On CKUT. Now you have to do editing.
No, it's perfect.
Oi vey. Shtetl, oi. Shtetl.